This is a conversation with John Fry, founder and CEO of Blendflow, a fintech company using AI to transform how lending works. John has a master in accounting, but his real path was built by creating web apps, payment systems, and lending tech from the ground up. I loved hearing about his global journey, building companies across Asia and now leading a worldwide team. And it all started with a childhood love of strategy games and coding websites.
Hi, John. Very nice to meet you. Thanks for joining the Humans and AI podcast. I really like your story on that. So let's get to know you a bit more. So John, right now you're the co-founder and CEO of Blendflow, right? However, I feel like the beginnings of someone, it's very important because, well, your story, the way that you started, how now you are leading a company. So what brought you to start this entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, for sure. First, great to be here. Great to be able to meet you and chat with you. Excited to be on the show today and grateful for the opportunity to chat about some of these things. First, getting into the start of the entrepreneurial journey, it goes back quite a bit. I don't think it's framed as one single moment of time where you had this epiphany and then that's the direction. I think the reality is more, it's just more of a bunch of sparks that light over time. Over your life that just continue to grow and lead you just naturally, organically in that direction. Or maybe not. Everyone's different. Maybe that's how it happens for me and maybe others are different. But for me, I think it really started. I was a big gamer, strategy gamer when I was very young. So I think that shaped things quite a bit. In college, I got my master's in accounting, but I'm actually most all of my time, if you look at relative time spent, was focused on building and learning to build websites and using different content management systems and running marketing campaigns and building different little applications and just consuming as much information as possible. As this was a lot of the time when, you know, like Google search and PPC and all these other new sources of ways to filter down and consume new information really started to be prevalent. And if you're the type of person that just goes down rabbit holes and wants to learn and wants to consume, then like this was, and you're in college and you're supposed to be learning, but this is all much more interesting than what's going on in your classes, then that's where all your time is focused and allocated. And it was really an exciting time. And after that, I decided I could go and continue to do what really sparks my interest and is really interesting to me, or maybe go get a normal job. I chose the former and just segued that in and led a lot of those businesses into what became my next businesses. And those were all sparks, right? Every learning, every website, everything that I found that was cool, how it related into a lot of the strategy games that I played so deeply when I was younger, just continue to grow and spark. And when all I was doing was that just continued to happen. And then you start to hone in on areas of particular interest. You start to specialize. You start to identify and see all of the depth of the challenges, whereas before, and problems that existed, whereas before, without that context and experience, you see the website and you're like, oh man, it must have it all figured out. You know, everything must work perfectly behind there. And then you realize that's not even close to a reality and that there is so much opportunity to come in and have an impact and improve things. And my degree was in business, so I gravitated more into financial types of technology and payments and lending, and then really started to specialize in lending in particular. And then my company became focused on that. And then that's where you really start to go deep and get a depth of understanding of the problems and all of those insights and angles, and working with those customers on a daily basis over many years start to give you the angles and insights you need to ultimately what for me became Blendflow. So that's the most of it, but happy to dig in anywhere in that that your audience would find interesting, but nevertheless, the story's for me.
Thanks. Oh, so you actually not only share the beginning of how you started, but as well the story of Blendflow. So that's just actually, this wasn't my next question. So thank you for answering.
So maybe I jumped on the talk. We can jump back too if you'd like.
No, it's all good. Actually, I actually like it because then I don't have to do it. John, you said that you are working with a global team, right? That, as you say, you're interested in fintech and Lendflow, it's all about making the financial system accessible to everyone. So that is like where you are focusing the most on. I have a curiosity about, because I saw a little bit of your background, your studies. Actually, you studied in Hong Kong for a year. Or I'm not sure if it was online or you were in person there. But so my question here, I guess that you, having a global team, you understand the importance of work culture, right? Like how different people work in different countries and with different culture. So from your experience, having that experience in Hong Kong, having your global team and yourself right now that you are so you're in US, just to double check. Yeah. So, well, in your experience, what you can share about that?
Yeah, for sure. Certainly that was a big part of the journey, because that was a study abroad program in the summer, like during the semester of the last year, or close to the last year of my studies. And I also did a lot outside of that. So yes, I was living there in Hong Kong, but I was also learning about all the business there. Obviously, crypto was big at this time. So I was getting into that and studying and learning that, of course. Any new technology that comes out, you got to go deep on it. And there also, I visited all the countries nearby Hong Kong, everywhere from Singapore to Thailand to Vietnam to Indonesia to the Philippines to Malaysia to really everyone that I could, to take full advantage of that opportunity and get as much exposure to many different cultures and things as I possibly could. And learned a lot from that and started to understand the depth and the differences and the complexities and how other people both work in their personal life and how they their mentality and how they go about things relative to the US. And I think that's really important too. Those different perspectives allow you to see things from a different angle as well. And that certainly was true for me. And I also realized there's a lot over here, and maybe this is an interesting place to build businesses also. And I can see opportunities here that maybe I wouldn't have been able to see just from the perspective of the US, and applied here in combination of what's going on in the US could be a powerful combination. After I graduated, I just flew directly back there. That's actually where I grew the first businesses. I actually did after like maybe 2 months I stayed in the US, and then I was like, I gotta get back over there and apply some of this there. And I lived in Hong Kong a little while longer. I stayed in Singapore for a bit, Thailand for a bit, and then ultimately ended up in the Philippines, where I built up operations for my next company at the time, which was Channel Growth. And that's where we really got deep into working with lenders and helping them with their different processes for customer acquisition, customer support, onboarding, all the parts of the process of making a great, efficient, like initial customer experience. And there was a lot of depth in learning there. And in the context of different cultures and their strengths and where they fit into that process and how things work in other places relative to the US, and using that knowledge as well.
Yeah, definitely. How do you lead now that, because I feel like as you said, you've lived in many different countries, right? And you soak up all their culture, and in the business wise, it's the same, right? Right now, it's as the leader and CEO of Lendflow, how do you apply that differences and the way that you lead in from that experience in your life?
You learn different regions of the world and strengths and weaknesses and where their skills and talent can be applied best. And we have obviously a big presence in the US, but also in many different other countries as well. And we have awesome teammates from all over the world, and you just learn to work with different cultures and to apply their skills and experience, and you learn from them every day. You visit them, you get the inside scoop. And if you're a tourist, it's very different from if you're running or operating and coming or know deeply a lot of the people who live there locally, because then you get to skip all the surface level tourist things and get down into the actual depth of the culture. And so you can actually learn a lot more quickly. and have much stronger experiences. That means we're pretty much working around the clock 24/7 as a company. It means that we have people from all over the world, from the US, but in many different countries and regions, in Colombia and Eastern Europe and the Philippines and all of these different places. And that's led to, I really think, a unique differentiated culture where everyone is encouraged to explore and to learn and to come to the same understanding that I was, because I recognize the value, and now everyone's encouraged to do the same and has the opportunity to meet people from all over and to have those learnings and insights themselves. And that's, I think, inspiring and very motivating for people and an important part of our culture, certainly.
That's cool. So, John, how do you keep the human side of finance while you're building scalable AI systems? So what I mean is, I feel like right now it's as everybody said, AI is taking over everything. So also in finance, like actually you're automating a lot of these things. So how do you keep the human side of finance for what you do?
Let's take it back. I think it enhances the human side ultimately from my applied experiences and from my understanding of really going deep there. Because think about what we've talked about, all these different places and different cultures from all over the world. If you think about AI in the same context, just think about it as a different culture and a different type of a new type of entity or person that you're incorporating in who has all these amazing skills, but you have to learn about how they operate and how they work. And you have to understand the depth of them, just like another culture or another country or another way of doing things somewhere else. So it's really not different in that way. And so, again, it applies over. You're just learning something new, but it's actually very analogous to what you've already done if you've been through those experiences. And so that's certainly true for me. And when you think about AI and how you keep the human component, it's really about people are afraid. They're operating from fear about this because they're like, AI is going to actually come and maybe replace me, right? Or make me irrelevant or do something and change things. And change is scary and it's happening so fast. And there's always an actual reaction to try to resist change. And that's true of every innovation ever that's been significant. There's always been that resistance. And ultimately, every time you ultimately learn that, wait a minute, we thought this was going to be some drag or something that takes the human element away, but actually, ultimately, it has enhanced the human element and make humans much more efficient and to do a better, higher value work. And of course, this is a big one, but there's been many big ones where this has been the case. And maybe this is the biggest ever. Maybe not. We'll see. There's good arguments to be made for both. But from what I've found, when actually you're a human, as a human, you get in and you start to work with it, that it's a force multiplier for you. It empowers you. It allows you to do so much more than you could before. And that's very inspiring and empowering for people that are high agency and that want to make an impact and want to get things done and want to problem solve. Those types of people are thrived. They don't just, they're not replaced. They're now much, much more powerful. And this is really motivating and inspiring from those people. And if you have a culture where that's the way it is, those are the type of people you surround yourself with, you can see that it actually eliminates a lot of the low value or busy work or things that ultimately that actually don't provide that much value and are very inefficient and that aren't as enjoyable to do. And what you get to start focusing on is more higher value activity where you can provide more impact and in a much faster, more efficient way. And you can make and accelerate more gains in all of the different domains that you are, whether that's lending or medicine or law or accounting or whatever. But in particular for lending, you can actually provide better value to the customer, drive inefficiency and waste out of the process, provide an experience, and then you can see the happiness and the joy that brings. And then the downstream impacts that can have. And when you start to understand that, you start to see that, wow, this is going to be very positive. And the fear that is driving some people's decisions is maybe could be valid, still needed to be explored, but likely also very likely to be misplaced. And I think we'll see that as time goes along, as long as the architecture of the AI is correct and it's built in the right way and humans are incorporated in the right way. And we think we found that here. And I think others will make the same discovery as well.
Great. You've talked about being around inspiring people who embrace AI and they thrive. Who is inspiring you in this AI field as an innovator or leader that makes you, yeah, like you admire him or her, whatever, with whoever it is. So who is inspiring you right now in this field?
There's a few in particular. And I know always when there's these questions, I always afterwards, I'm like, oh, man, I forgot a big one. And I should have said that. And now I'm disappointed in myself because that was someone I definitely should have mentioned. But I'm sure that'll happen here. But certainly big ones include both thought leaders and people who are applying AI and people that are working with it closely. A few that I'll mention: Elon Musk, Andre Carpathy, and Sonia Oja are three big ones for me as far as thought leaders and people that are applying AI, I think, in a good way, and that are helping others and learn as well, and that put out great content and material consistently, and are very enjoyable to read and follow.
Great, thanks for sharing. John, your company is LendFlow. LendFlow is using a lot of robots to do communication and outreach. That's what I understood a little bit of how you guys are working with the startup. So how do you make sure that your customers, human customers, I guess they're human, you never know, right?
Maybe I'm AI right now, so you never know. It's
common.
Yeah, I know. Let's say your customers are humans. So how do you think, or do you get any feedback from them? How do they feel when they are talking with a robot?
I think there's more context that is important before I answer the question, because there's more to it than just talking to a robot. It's the timing of when you talk to the robot. It's the quality of the context that the robot has to have the conversation. It's the next steps that it can happen after the robot. And it's the tools and the robot has access to. And I think all of that's very important, because that initial one, which is the timing, is very important too. What happens in many industries, and particularly in lending, when you go and try to engage a product or service, there's a big time lag between when you engage and when you get the next step that you desire. And so that part of the process can be very frustrating. In embedded lending, you can take this a step further. And if products are presented to you in the wrong place, the wrong time upstream of that, then that's also can be very frustrating. And particularly in financial services, where brute force has been one of the main drivers of customer acquisition, where it's all, you just hit as many people as you can, as often as you can, with information, and hopefully you catch them on the right day where a loan is the right fit for them. But for the user, that's very frustrating, because most days it's not that right day. And you're bombarded with all this like spam or messaging that you don't want. And that's a frustrating experience before you even ever apply. So now you have a negative connotation about financial service before you even apply for a financial service. So going in, you're already frustrated. Then maybe you apply and you have to wait a day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days for a decision and approval. And you just want to know, am I approved so I can move on? There's so much information asymmetry. You don't know. It's an opaque process, right? And now, most of that is because it's very difficult to run a scaled business with, when you have to throw human capital at the problem, right? And the time delays are just due to these inefficiencies and the allocation of resources that are required to run that, especially at scale when you have so many different types of customers across different industries and across different credit spectrums and across different credit products. And all of this makes it extremely challenging. And so what I've seen is that, well, they're much happier at the outset, first, because they're engaged at the right place at the right time when they need a product, more likely to be that to the embedded nature too. So that's not just AI, but AI can be used to better target and do things that also can advance there. And then second is, it's immediate. You're getting communication right away, right? You're getting a white glove tailored experience. And if you're doing it with an agent that has all the context and understanding about you and can answer all your questions succinctly and clearly, and if you need to get you to a human, can get you there. If need you to get to the next step, can get you there. If you want to book a meeting, they can do that. And that leads to a much better experience for the human at the end of that. And that's it. Then all of those things are major problems today that AI is quickly and rapidly helping to solve, right? All that context is important because they're very happy with this. This is a big improvement in many different industries. And then the conversations are quite positive. And there's many cases they don't even really
realize they were talking to AI. And even if they do realize and they're frustrated, AI is, okay, no problem. Sorry about that. I'm just an assistant trying to give you white glove service. Let me escalate you to a human right now. You ready to talk? Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. Boom. The human's on the line right then. But now there's enough humans to handle that capacity because there's a layer ahead that can handle most of the questions, right? And all the questions have context, right? They know on the last time you applied, they know the loan offers that you have outstanding. They know your business and the information about your business deeply. They know everything and they can get depth of understanding that even a human couldn't have, because all of that is disparate in all of these other places. And it's hard for them to access at scale when they're dealing with many customers, and AI has no problem with any of that. So the conversations can have more depth, can be a higher quality. And if there is a human at any time needed, then AI will quickly get them there and quickly get them to that next step. The experience for the end user is much better, ultimately.
Okay. So do you see AI, just this kind of looking more into the future, do you see the evolution of AI as an employee of the humans, like the supervisor, like human is the supervisor and AI is doing the whole task, repetitive tasks and all these automations? And then, okay, as you said, okay, if AI cannot fix a problem then it's okay, I will contact someone else, which is the human. Do you think it's going to evolve that way? Or do you think it's going to be more kind of cooperative? Or, yeah, what do you think?
This is how it's going to go. It's really going to be the normal human process first, augmented by AI, right? And you're going to look at every single touch point throughout the process or the system that needs inefficiency reduced from it, and where AI can play a role and add value. And one at a time, you're going to start with the low-hanging fruit or the lowest risk if your brand reputation is something you care about most, or you want the highest impact first. So maybe it's the part of the process where there's the most waste, or it's a customer experience and you want to apply it to the place where you can provide a much better customer experience, but you're going to start somewhere. And then once you have the data and the feedback, you're going to start to apply it to all the other touch points through the system, right? And this is going to be AI augmenting humans. And then ultimately, that is then going to transition to the AI is just going to be triggered automatically through the process. And the humans are now going to be supporting really the AI where they're needed and doing things, like you said, like auditing their work, right? And then after that, there's going to be another AI layer that's put in to monitor and audit that work itself. And then the human will be in for more escalation, right? More specialized parts of the processes, more auditing the auditor. Right. And so I think it'll continue to advance from there, where now more higher value work, more things that they can innovate on and elsewhere in the process, and moving to playing those roles. So AI is draining the process. Humans are the really ones managing them and auditing them, and then focusing on where else they can be applied and other innovations they can add more value to the process as well, to continue to drive out waste or identify opportunities for better distribution or whatever else that may be. So I think that's how the evolution's going currently and will go in the future.
Okay. Yeah. We always think about what's going to happen in the future. Nobody knows. Maybe, yeah.
That's not... Nothing does, right? Yeah, maybe not. Yes, maybe not. Maybe there's an insight. This is just a guess from applied experience, but things are evolving so rapidly and changing so quickly. Like 6 to 12 months is probably like 3 to 5 years and in normal like technology advancements. And so new input or insights can be gleaned that could change this. And you always have to continue to reevaluate. This is a point in time and it's just an opinion. It's just a thesis. But as there are new inputs, as time goes on, that's likely going to change as well. And it should. If you're not willing to reevaluate constantly, then you find yourself on the right course, on the wrong course, and missing the right one if it's going to happen differently. So we'll see how that goes. But that is very important and a great point.
Yeah, right now we don't know what is right or what is wrong. Who is right or who is wrong? Not what is right, but who is right or who is wrong, right? Because there's so many things that you can read about AI, about how the world works or the future or whatever. And I feel like it's sometimes it's so overwhelming that people just ignore it, just like whatever. And I don't know if this is good or bad, but people do that a lot. Oh, AI, oof, AI, well, whatever. It's like, at the end of the day, I think that Google has been AI for a long time because it's artificial intelligence anyways when we Google things, and now we call it ChatGPT or DeepSeek or whatever. So it's I think it's very kind of interesting topic, but it's very, we go out of, yeah, it's very deep. Okay. So, John, do you have any story that you can, that you could share with us? Like, it's optional, obviously, that it can be related with right now, the stuff that you are doing, LendFlow, or has businesses that you've been doing as well, that help you to keep going with your mission of what you are doing related with fintech and making more accessible to everyone. So any story that really keep help you keep pushing in that mission?
Certainly. There are different things every day, sparks that I just continue to add to that glowing orb of inspiration to continue and to push harder and faster. So really, I think it's maybe mission two that tie together is just the delight that you can see from the customer when the opacity to the process is being reduced. There's so much information asymmetry that causes, again, a frustration in that experience. Going back to that prior part, is next is like they don't know what they need to do to get approved. They don't know where to apply. They don't know what's real and what's not. They don't know if the rates and terms are getting are optimal for them. But they also have limited time constraints. They don't have time to apply to everyone. And if they did, they'd also have a really bad experience because now they have 20 different people or more calling them and contacting them and wasting their time. And they need to focus that time on growing their business and deploying the resources to grow their business, become a better entrepreneur, delight their own customers. And that's really what's most important to them. And so when you see how much better you're able to make the experience to them and provide that transparency and reduce that opacity and provide them a white glove experience, regardless of the size of their business. Maybe some high, like grade credit spectrum customers maybe get this more often, but now it's an equalizer. Now across the board, regardless of the size of the business or where you are personally or professionally, and you apply for a loan product, and whether it's an auto loan or a mortgage or a business loan or whatever it is, now that you're going to have a more delightful experience. And we've seen this with one of our customers is at BHG Financial. They do at scale both business and commercial loans and kind of some loans that sit in between that for practices like solopreneurs and launching new practices and things like that. An awesome lender, but prior, someone that was had an incredible product, but the timing it took and the process for customers wasn't optimal. Before, maybe it took anywhere from 24 to 36 hours just to know if you're going to have a pre-approval. And now that process happens in under a minute, right? Now it's basically instant. Now to get to the next stage, you have a set of steps that you can do. And now all the inefficiency, instead of that's taking 2, 5, 7 days to get to the next stage to maybe get a firm approval and get through the contracting and all of that, now we're driving that down. So again, that is happening in under a couple of minutes as well, right? And now all of these products can be embedded in places where the customers already are, right? And they're bringing the loan products to where they are. And that's that embedded experience. And now where they are with a much more fully embedded, they don't need to go anywhere, a much more efficient process, a much more white glove process. And now you can provide that same experience regardless of the size of the business or the size of the loan or the credit product that's required. Equalizer across all of that. And I'm seeing that evolution and that iteration has been profoundly impactful and energizing and motivating for our team and for theirs. And it's providing real, real big impact. And it's only accelerating. And I think it's going to be very exciting to see the further downstream impacts of this reducing waste to a better cost of capital, even more streamlined white glove experiences, even better solving the opacity problem and better transparency. And it's only going to improve. And I think those improvements compound and are exponential. And that's also true about just learning and deploying AI. You need to get started right now because it compounds, it's compounding. And that's true for applying it to a system or a process as well. And so the sooner you get started, the better. And that's why a lot of that in the lending space, I think it's coming to the realization of, okay, we need to get going on this. And because those leads and those insights and those impacts to the downstream companies and the joy that it creates for them and for the people working to deliver those experiences is so great that I think it's only accelerating the adoption.
Okay, I've got one last question for you, John. So this is, okay, so imagine that you have all the resources okay, you have all the money that you need or more. You have all the technology, AI, the future technology. So with all that, so, okay, if you could use all those resources and all that money and all that technology to build LendFlow, what would you do?
First of all, it's an interesting thought exercise as far as unlimited resources, but I actually think unlimited resources would probably be counterproductive and would get us to the end goal slower. So first thing I would do was decline those resources and just use the resources that we have already, because I feel that having everything and having too many resources allows you, takes away from your focus and allows you to try to do too much too fast and expand too broad before you go too deep. And I think that's dangerous for ultimately getting to the end goal. There's certainly a set number of resources that I think is the right number. And I don't think it's certainly not everything. And what that number is, I think it depends on where you are in the journey and the goal of what you're trying to accomplish. But ultimately, with the right amount of resources, is just to continue down the path and go an inch wide and a mile deep and continue to make sure that we focus on providing the best possible lending experience that we can and delight and create joyful experiences, magical experiences for customers, for our customers, more importantly, to do that for their customers, the lenders, the banks that we work with, the brands that we work with, and stay focused on that and really nail that. And that's what we're going to do.
Oh, yeah. I like it. I was going to, let's see. Yes, I think if I agree with you, like focus, I think is very important. Nowadays, it's very difficult to focus. We have so much noise around. We don't know what is the important thing right now at all. And it takes so much energy to focus, actually. Thanks very much for this chat. I enjoy it very much. Thanks for sharing. Thank you.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.